I saw this interesting Ramban. I just wanted to share it with you. I saw it once before, and I think I only understood it this time around. The Ramban points out that it's very interesting that Ramban al-Torah points out that it's very interesting that the Chashmonaim got to power, and they did a tremendous, enormous Yeshua for Klal Yisrael in the way that they were able to remove the Yevonim and the Misyavnim out of power. But it's interesting to note that their authority and their reign was short-lived. It was short-lived. They didn't stay in power for a long time. I've forgotten now how many years it was, but the Chashmonaim's rulership, after Matisseau, even after the times of the, after the Matisseau's children's times, it was on for a very limited amount of time. And it's pardon? Tov Shin Mem Beis? Not sure. But it was a limited amount of very limited amount of time. And the question is, why so? They did such an enormous impact on they saved the day. They saved the day. So it sounds bizarre that their reign lasted for such a short time only. The Ramban explains because they did something critically wrong. And what they did is that they were not really Mezer HaMelucha. They were not children, not from Shevet Yehud. They were not children of David. To the grandchildren of David HaMelech, and the pasuk says, Shevet Yehuda, the pasuk says that the scepter should not be taken away from the hands of Shevet Yehuda. And since they were not part of the Shevet Yehuda, they were not part of the tribe of Yehuda, they were not part of Malchus Beis David, they were not part of that family, that lineage. So therefore, they pushed themselves. They did call themselves kings, they did call themselves the ultimate authority, and because of that they were punished. That's Loshna Amman, they were punished, and their reign didn't last for very long. It was very temporary melucha, very temporary power that they had, and authority, and to take it away, because they pushed themselves that little bit too far. They pushed themselves that little bit too far, and it wasn't really for them to claim Malchus and they claim kingdom. So it sounds in a way like a bit of an anticlimax in a way. We're talking about the Yevonim and Chashmonoim, Mil Hashem Eloi. How many of them? Then after it turns out that actually they were not that great. Actually, when you look, they pushed themselves a little bit too far. They called themselves king and HaKadosh Baruch Hu to punish them. Sounds like an anticlimax. Were they good or not? You know, black and white people. You know, are they good? Are we thinking about them as the good people? Or are we thinking about the bad people? What are they? You know, is it good or bad? What were they? It sounds like an anticlimax in a way. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like they were so good and great, they saved the day, and then after saying, actually, they were not so great, they pushed them Malchus. It's a strange truth. It's a bit hard to understand. And I think there's an important yesod over here. I think it's too important. Yeah, what do you tell now? Yep. But still, it was an element of. Yeah. Find a nekuda, yeah, because the truth is nothing is really completely good and completely bad in Yiddishkeit. It's true, definitely true. So I think there's another element here as well, though, that I think it's an important element. Although what you're saying is definitely true, and it's true about Pesach, we put the kittel on, yeah, out of all the malchus everywhere, and then we put the kittel on to still show Yom Hamisa, and there's always a bit of that. It's true, definitely. But I think there's another element as well. I think it's even more important in a way. And that's the following thought. That we would have thought, we would have personalized. Is that a word, personalized? Have you also personalized? To make it depend on a person? No. Wrong guess. We would have personified? Individualized? Yeah. So the point is, you tell me soon what the right word is. The point is that we would have thought that it would have made it too much depend on the Chashmonaim. Yeah, and Bimei, Matisseau, Vonov, Chashmona, Matisseau, Ben Yochanan, Kayol, Chashmona, Vonov would have referred the Yeshua directly to the people. And it's never like we know that, but on Leil HaSedi, we'll never mention Moshe Rabbeinu's name. We don't mention Moshe because it's not really the Yeshua, the great salvation that took place, had nothing to do directly with Moshe Rabbeinu. His HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it in place. It wouldn't have been Moshe, it would have been somebody else. However great Moshe Rabbeinu was, it's not dependent on him as a person, him as a persona. It's the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is called Ha'ba Shluchim Lamokim. There's many messages HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have used many other people as well. Of course, he was great, and that's why he was chosen. But it's not dependent on a person. Similarly, also when it comes to the story of Hanukkah, it's not, the point is not the Chashmonaim. Yes, they were great, and yes, they did a great job. But if we'd have just, he would have kept them as the great people that created the Israeli independence. Yeah, would have said, oh, they were great. They done it. Good job. It was them, and that's really wrong. Yes, not just deifies, not just also as. Pardon? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a work of Shmuel's world plan, and they were part of that. But it's not that it's Matisho and his children that created that Yeshua. And therefore, it had to be that they did good things, but also, yes, later they did bad things. And therefore, it's not direct. We have to realize that Yeshua is not purely in direct connection with them. Shmuel's plan is much, much greater than that. And I think that's an important element as well. As well as another point as well, point B, is that we never have an eternal, that's part of life. Nothing is eternal. There's nothing, a nitzochon, a victory, which is eternal. Until Mashiach Tzidkenu will come. If they would have won the battle, and they would have gained authority and power, they would have said, good, that's good, that's excellent, that's brilliant, that's eternal. No, there was a very temporary aspect to it that already a generation later they moved away, they were pushed away, because it's not nothing lasts, nothing, it's like, yeah, unfortunately nothing great lasts forever, and some nothing bad lasts forever. Even in Klal Yisrael, the Toldos Yisrael teaches that if there's one lesson that we learn from the history of Klal Yisrael, is that it's just ups and downs constantly ups and downs, and therefore if there is that Chashmonaim, however great they were, and they did do an outstanding important job in removing the Yevonim, but at the same time, it can't be them ruling forever. It's going to move. I'm tremendously humbled that I've got this menorah of my great-grandfather's menorah, and I think it's unbelievable that, you know, that there's ups and there's downs, there's better tkufas and worse tkufas, and it's still, you know, we are Klal Yisrael, Netzach Yisrael, Netzach of Klal Yisrael will always last, and that's probably one of the messages. There's ups and there's downs, there's difficult, there's better tkufas, but, yeah, so that's probably one message that is this element of the Chashmonaim not holding on to power for too long, and this element that the Ramban says that they were punished later on for claiming Malchus incorrectly. Okay, Rabbi Yisrael, Simon Shim Chof Ches. We're up to Sif Yud Zayin. We're going to be moving on with Sif Yud Ches now. But I did want to just maybe discuss briefly the Ramah. The Ramah tells us that a child, the Ramah says, I'm just going over the words in the beginning of the Ramah, Muta Leimali Nidli Asis Tafshil Kotn Shele Malechol. You're allowed to ask a goy to cook a meal for a child who has nothing to eat. To Stam Tzoki Kotn Cholishem Besakona Domi, because a cotton is considered Cholishem Besakona. And you're allowed to ask a goy to cook for a child. What is the definition of a child? We're learning that a child is considered a Cholishem Besakona. What age, Chaim? What, Chaim Yeshua Levi? What age group would you consider a child that is naturally considered a choyle? What age?
Up to this age.
Up to this age. When is a child? Oh, you're quoting Gemara in Sukkah that when he doesn't need his mother. So when is that? Well, it depends for what. When is he not needing his mother? What would you say? What age group is that? 5, 6, 8, 9. 7 years old. Up to 7, you're saying, and that's many shit is all like you. Tagla, until 7 years old, you're allowed to ask a goy if something, the child needs something. They're very vulnerable still. A 7-year-old child, physically, is not, you know, we mustn't overestimate. And a 7-year-old child, we have to sometimes be careful. And therefore, it's considered Cholesh and Besakona by default. Everybody agrees to that? No? You'd say what? Older? 9 years old. Until 9 years old, is considered Cholish Embers HaKona. He's allowed to ask a goy to do Malacha for him. 9 years old. Dan Weiss is 9 years old. Yeah. Others disagree and are much more machmir. And they say that as long as he needs special food, Chaznish says, as long as he needs special food, as long as when he needs adult food, the heter doesn't apply anymore. Because his body is developed sufficiently that he can eat adult food. So what age is that? When does a child eat normal food? one off, two, three for sure. So the some poskim came a machmen and say that no. So we've got a machlokas from I think 3 years old all the way till 9 years old. When is a child considered a chole shem b'sakana? Obviously, if he's unwell, he's automatically direct to chole shem b'sakana. But we're talking about a child who is well. When would it be considered chole shem b'sakana? So pick your opinion, yeah, between 3 and 9.
So obviously it's not one size fits all. But
correct.
The example that we were given is that when he's locked in his room, he might die from fear.
That was Mishnah Berurah in Sif Kotten Lamed Ches, yes.
It's not that he's going to die from anything physical, it's the...
It's the emotional aspect.
So Mustama, it's got more to do with how mature he is developed psychologically.
Yeah, probably that as well. Yeah, there's probably that as that aspect as well. Yeah, so you put that into the cheshbon as well. Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the distress and the yeah. See if you chesh, Rabbi Yisrael. We're continuing. Hikis dom venitzdane, bloodletting, which was a very common medical treatment to allow some blood to you cut a bit of the and then blood exits and gives you the shivers naftali, I can see. Yeah, so, and that will be bloodletting. Hik is done, very common. The Gemara speaks about it in numerous places, Shulchan Aruch as well. Hik is done, but it's done and it gets a cold. Now, this cold is a not just a cold because it's a bit chilly outside, but it's an internal coldness. So, Hik is done. He did a bloodletting treatment. When it's done, it caught a cold. You're allowed to make a medura, a fire. Even in the summer months of Tammuz, because it's an internal cold, and because of this internal cold, it's quite dangerous. Therefore, you're allowed to make a fire to warm him up, even betkufas Tammuz, even the summer months. Mishnah Berurah says, "Cotton samach beis when it's done, mishum desakoni b'stomat." This is a sakona. Somebody who has a kozes dam and he's freezing cold. This is dangerous. Chazal establishes as a dangerous situation, and you're therefore not to do a fire, which seems to help, so that keeps him internally warm. It's even permitted to make that fire through a yid. You don't need to bother asking a goy. A yid can make this fire, which is a deraisa. Going back to any dangerous and threatening scenario, chole sheish b'sakona im karloi, if he is cold, freezing, hoisim lo medura l'ischam, you're allowed to warm him up by making a fireplace. That's permitted for chole sheish b'sakona. Testam chole mesukin etzaltzino, because a chole, when he is cold, that makes things even more dangerous. Even more dangerous. V'imef shalidin yudi, if it's possible to make a fire through a goy, yes, alidin yudi, you should certainly ask a goy. But if you cannot get hold of goy, you should, and you may, and you must, make a fire through a yid, because if he's cold, that's dangerous. See if you test. Chole shem b'sakona, chole if there's no danger involved. Muta b'shule ak, b'shule en yudim, you're allowed to have b'shule en yudim, he's allowed to eat something which was cooked by a goy. Now we know, there is normally an issur d'rabbanon of eating foods cooked by a goy, which is called b'shulakum. So there's really a contradiction in terms, and somebody did raise this point a couple of days ago. On the one hand, we learned that for chole shem b'sakona, you're allowed to ask a goy to cook. That's the halacha. Right? You're allowed to ask a goy to cook something for chole shem b'sakona. That's true. And in fact, you must ask the goy, because you're not allowed to do melacha d'raisa yourself. So you ask a goy. That's on the one hand, and that's true. On the other hand, there's an issur rabbanon of b'shulakum. So that's a contradiction. You've got over here a catch 22. Where does the expression catch 22 come from? I was always wondering.
By Joseph Heller, it was written in the 60s, I think. It was set in an Air Force, American Air Force base somewhere in Europe, and the catch 22 was, if you want to leave the Air Force, you have to be mad. But anyone who's mad enough to leave the Air Force probably isn't mad, precisely because they want to leave the Air Force.
I wonder where did the expression catch 22 come from? Catch 20. What's the?
It means
I know what it means, yeah. But why 22?
Because either way,
22.
It was just what he chose.
Okay. All right. Okay. So if So yeah. Okay. So the shayla is as follows. So you can't get it right on both. You can't. On one hand, we have to ask a goy to cook. On the other hand, you may not ask a goy to cook because he can't know whether he can benefit from it. It's bishlakum. So what are you going to do? So shulchanuch paskins over here. Choyle she'en b'sakana. You must know, and you must know this is an exception to the rule. Muta b'sholeakum. He is allowed to eat food cooked by a goy, which is unlike the general Issa Drabonon. But Shmuel gives a bit of a background to this in Tzivkot and Samach Gimel. Mota b'sholeinu yudav v'gav, and although Tesha Issur Drabonon also l'choy l'shem b'sakon, although normally an Issa Drabonon is prohibited for a choyla, l'choy v'lishol, it's also a choy l'shem b'sakon is not allowed to eat something which is also Drabonon, something which is an aveilem Drabonon, something which is a treifem Drabonon, something which is bosa becholov Drabonon, Hechol Hashem B'Sakona is not allowed to eat. So it's B'Shalakum different. Kedisa B'Yeridea Simen Kuv Namel Shaini B'Shalakum. This is different. The halacha of B'Shalakum is different than any other Isuri Drabonon. She'en Isur Machmas Atzma. It's not something which intrinsically also. It's not intrinsically also. What does that mean? It's not intrinsically also. She'ein isuri machmas atzma. What a beautiful Mishneh Berurah. What a beautiful Mishneh Berurah. It's not intrinsically also. So what is it if it's not intrinsically also? What do you mean it's not intrinsically also? What does it mean? Be'shalakum, Chodesh B'Sakona is allowed to eat. Why? Because it's not intrinsically also. As opposed to any other isuri derabonon. So if you've got something, a food, which is also, say a Chodesh B'Sakona has got a certain food, give me an example, which is also midrabanon. Some gelatin, which is also midrabanon, say. Some basa b'chalav, which is, that's for his treatment, that's what he needs. So generally, the halacha is, he may not, it's also midrabanon, he may not consume it. But here we're learning, bishul akum is permitted. Why? What's the difference? Because any surah machmas atzma, it's not intrinsically also. What's pshat? What's pshat?
I'm
talking all the drabonons were done in, I mean, the drabonons, you're making the assumption that some of the drabonons were established at different times. Not sure. I don't know about that. What do you say? Why is Bishul Akum? So I think we are. Very good. That's right. That's absolutely correct. The explanation is, as Naftali Israel HaKohen suggests, correctly, that's what Achronim explained, Mishneh Berurah, that the food intrinsically, there's nothing wrong with it. When you've got a food which has got TF ingredients, then this also is, I'm going to use the word chemically, but that's not the real word, but the cheft, that's right. It's wrong that the food itself intrinsically, yeah, it's something. As opposed to here, it's not. If somebody would have cooked, as you said, if Yid would cook exactly the same food, it would be all right. So it's something to do with the action involved, and something to do with who cooked it, and why they cooked it, and what was it. It's not the cheft, it's not the item, it's not intrinsically, but it's because it went through the process of Bishul Akum. And that's why Chachomim were matted this, it's more lenient, Chachomim were matted this when it comes to Chol Hashem B'Sakona. So if you've got some gelatin which is also in the Rabbanon, it will be also for Chol Hashem B'Sakona. If you've got something which is possible cholam drabonon, it will be also for cholam shem sakona. Something which is got orolam drabonon will also be.
Why is
gelatin drabonon
not the
if it is, for whatever case, if it's nifsel mech, whatever, if there's such a scenario that gelatin is only also drabonon. Okay, so that's what we said. Become a cholam very cholof, and you know what? This yeet, who is a cholam shem sakona, who's eating now this bishul akum, he is allowed. It could be potatoes. It could be, it's likely to be potatoes and carrots. Cereal. He's allowed to eat this. He's allowed to eat it. He makes a broch on it. This is a steer in Mishneh Berurah. He says that the leftovers may be eaten on Motzei Shabbos as well. Now, what about the kelim? That's interesting, Shaila. How about you say, what do you tie now? Pinyon, what do you say about the kelim? So this was now, again, we've got a Chol Hashem B'Sakona, he's really unwell. But he's not in danger, he's not in danger. He's unwell, he's got this very, very heavy flu. He's got a broken leg. He's got this real, I don't know, he's really, really not well, he's in bed. So the only thing that can help him is if he has got a hot, what? He's got a hot? hot water bottle. Okay, we're going to go for the water bottle again. Okay, let's go for the water bottle. No, because there's no bishlakum on that. We need something which can have bishlakum. Can you have some potatoes? Is that really going to help him?
A hot drink.
A hot drink. Okay, let's go for a hot drink. Okay, let's go for a hot drink. Okay, let's go for the hot drink. So now he's going to have, you want to give another example? Because it was done in a permitted way. It was done for permitted purpose. It was done for Chayil Hashem B'Sakana. Now, okay, so he's cooking now for this Chayil Hashem B'Sakana, and he's got this kettle now. So I understand you did Chayil Hashem B'Sakana, and that's fine. You've got the kettle, which is not potentially, it's not a 100% bulletproof example, but the kettle in this scenario now will be now used for Bishlakum, or the pot was used for Bishlakum. Is this... It was cooked by a goy. That's what we're saying. The goy used it. So is this now? Does the pot now need to be kashered or not? Pot needs to be kashered or not? Bishlakum. No. Mishnah Berurah says v'akenim shel bishuleinu yudim tzrichim hechsher. Mishnah Berurah paskens over here that yes, they will be required to be kashered. That's Mishnah Berurah paskens over here. It's debatable, but the Mishnah Berurah says that he brings such an opinion. And then he says, V'yesh Mekilin, the last line, he said, there are some who are lenient, and Tzichim Echshe Klal, who say it doesn't need to be kashered. V'asoy Mechalein Lenin Kelim, Shebishlo Men Echolim, B'Shabbos Leipzit, said there is room for leniency. But the Ma'isa Mishnah Berurah brings two opinions, and many are hold, it's debatable, but many hold that it does need to be kashered. Tzif Chav Rabbeis, we move on with the next scenario. Ein Noisin Yain Letzoy Cha'ein. I cannot explain this exactly in medical terms, but some people who suffered from eye trouble, they would put a bit of wine on the eye, or in the eye, a bit of wine. Done it before? How does that? A bit of eye.
It kills the germs, right?
Oh, that's what it is. It kills the germs. Good. That must be the explanation.
Use whiskey because that might be a bit too strong.
Oh, very good.
Peaty whiskey might...
Yeah, good. Okay, so that's pretty much what we're talking about. You may not put a bit of wine. Here, you've got the explanation. That's good. You may not put a bit of wine into your eye. Because it's a vua. But you may put it on top of the eye. Because you're not putting it in the eye. You're putting it on top of the eye, on the eyelid, as it were. Now, if you're putting it on top, so it's permitted. But in Pesach, also, if you're purposely opening and closing the eye, that is still also. But if you're not positively opening and closing purposely the eye, then it's okay. So again, to put in the eye, to put wine in the eyes also. To put it on top, on the eyelid, that depends. You're allowed to put it if you're just going to keep your eyes normally, that's alright. But if you're afterwards going to open and close your eyes in a very visible manner that you are doing something medical, that's going to be awesome because it's nicker, it's recognizable. You're doing a medical treatment over here, and that's going to be awesome. Feroik Toffel, saliva. Saliva helps, we know that saliva's got some qualities, saliva's got some medical qualities apparently. I think that the medical science agrees to that, even to this day, I believe. So Feroik Toffel, I feel gabbe vosso. It's disinfected a little bit, right? That's what they say. For roik tofel, I feel like gabbav also. If you've got roik tofel, roik means saliva, tofel means, empty, means that you didn't eat recently. It's roik tofel, like after the tinnitus. Roik tofel, I feel like gabbav also. Now, when you've got saliva, empty saliva, even on top of the eyelid is permitted. The muchamil tzalafu of it, because that's evident you're doing a medical treatment over here. Saliva on top of the eyes also. The Mishnah Berurah asks, what happens if in the morning you wake up, and your eye, something came out of the eye, and it's very, you've got a sticky eye. You're allowed to take a bit of saliva and wash it off. Remember, those days, we don't have the sinks that we have, you know, the water that we have, you know, as accessible as we've got nowadays. So, somebody wanted to take a bit of saliva and rinse his eye, clean his eye from the, it's a bit sticky, it's hard to open and close the eye in the morning. Does that mean that it's also? Because roik tofel, empty saliva, a filal gabav also, to put on the eyes also. Temuchmil tzlefuah, because it's evident you're doing a fuah. Mishnah Berurah is matya. And he says, that's okay. Because the eye, it's hard to open and close the eye, that will be permitted. And Mishnah Berurah is matya this, in Sivkot and Samach Zayin. The answer, because that's not considered a refuah. Okay, Rabbi Yisrael, we'll finish off for tonight. What we learned this evening is we spoke about the definition of a cotton. When is it considered a cholish and besakona? We spoke about the, Hakosas Dom.
that it is mutter to do that, even Al Yedei Yisrael, because it's considered a sakana. Similarly, we learned the interesting halacha that Bishul Akum is not established, the issue of Bishul Akum is not being established when it comes to Chol Shein Bo Sakana, and therefore you're allowed to ask God to cook something for Chol Shein Bo Sakana. We spoke about the Kelim, and we spoke about Motzei Shabbos. With regards to wine into the eyes of a Chola, we learned that in the eye, certainly also on top of the eye, depends if you're making extra, if you're putting it on top of the eye, then it's evident. If you're doing medical treatment, it's also. Otherwise, if you keep your eyes regular, that's going to be muta. We spoke about the saliva as well. These are the shilas of tonight, and we'll carry on with Siv Chaval of tomorrow. May it's Hashem, Afreilich and Chanukah to all.